Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining our Twitter space today with Seller and Oasis to discuss some of the interesting collaborations that have developed recently, as well as some futures for both technology. We'll give it a few more minutes to let people trickle in, and then we'll begin. Okay, I think we have a good amount of people in the space now, and more people will trickle in later. So thank you all, guys all for joining. Today we have Michael from the Seller Network, who's the core developer there. Michael, do you want to maybe start off with a brief introduction to, you know, Seller as well as yourself?
Sure. Hey, thank you, Will. And yeah, thanks, Oasis Protocol, for inviting me. And Michael, a core developer at Seller Network, and we are a one of the one of the very like OG projects to build on like Ethereum and in generating the blockchain space. And we first started off as a scalability solution on top of Ethereum back in 2018, and then we kind of like expanded ourselves to kind of explore like more of the cross-chain space. Like I think starting in like late 2019 to 2020, we started doing like cross-chain stuff to kind of like bring not just tokens, but also like interchain messaging to all of the blockchains that we connect to. And I'm very happy to kind of share some of our experiences and like building on Oasis, including like building Oasis protocol here. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much, Michael. We're happy to, you know, extend our sort of collaboration with Seller, which started with your guys' token or asset transfer bridge on our Emerald record network, and then recently be the first interchain messaging bridge to be connected to our Sapphire network. And we're excited for the possibilities that privacy and interchain messaging can achieve. And so, yeah, we'll probably talk about that in a little bit. But first, just an introduction to myself. For those of you who don't know, I'm Will. I'm the ecosystem growth manager here at Oasis. Sort of my role is to work with our various departments, the marketing, BD, community, and engineering, and help set strategy and growth for how we can build our ecosystem and to be, you know, both unique and novel, and also have different synergies with other ecosystems through things like Seller and interchain messaging. So without further ado, let's get into some of our questions. So I guess since Oasis Sapphire has integrated Seller interchain messaging, could you maybe just give a little bit of an explanation on IM? You know, what made you guys decide that this was needed, and what the use cases are, or maybe just like a just brief background on Seller IM and what you guys are hoping to achieve with this feature?
Yeah, definitely. So we are actually in we call it like blockchain interoperability protocol. So I think that's like the definition of like our like how our protocol, like what our protocol is. And so basically what we want to do is like want to enable a one-click user experience across like any blockchain or any layer, what they call like in the scalability terminology, right? Like across blockchain chains and layers. And so we want to like give this like one-click user experience for to access like tokens, like fungible tokens and DeFis, like GameFi's, NFTs, like and governance functionalities, all sorts of things. Like all of them will enable like that kind of one-click user experience across multiple chains. And like and so that's like more on the user side. And on the developer side, like accordingly, they'll be able to just build interchain native D apps and using like our interchain messaging SDK. So that they could gain access to efficient liquidity utilization and like just like coherent application logic across multiple chains and shared states across multiple chains. That's also some goodies. And yeah, so that is like our goal of why we're building this like IAM system across different chains, including Oasis.
Yeah, thanks. I guess, a lot of users are used to token asset bridging. That's been like how bridges have worked in the past. What made you feel there was a need for messaging bridges? Like what were token bridges not achieving, and what do you see messaging bridges sort of solving?
So I think in terms of like on the high level, like token bridge is really just like one use case of what like the interchain messaging system can achieve. It's more of like a specialized use case. I mean, like architecture-wise, we didn't build the token bridge on top of the messaging system just because we feel like the there's more like a specialty to this like token bridging functionality, so that we kind of build this as a separate module alongside the interchain messaging system. But I think fundamentally, it's just a more of a restricted use case of like what interchain messaging can achieve. And as I mentioned like a little bit before, interchain messaging can bring not just fungible tokens, right, but also it's like NFTs and DeFis, like GameFi, and all sorts of like blockchain applications that people are like excited about, like that. Those are enabled by the interchain messaging system. So it kind of like just greatly expands what a traditional like cross-chain bridge can do. So like now it can not just like bridge tokens, but also like all sorts of just like general information can be brought across different chains. And like actually like when we designed the interchain messaging system, we actually kind of combine like we added this notion of like message with payment sort of into the system, so that it can combine the functionality of both the token bridge and interchain messaging into one, so that it's easier to just build semantics that like I want to transfer this token from like chain A to chain B, and then also do the thing like while we transfer the token. So yeah, we build some sort of like synergy in there. So yeah, but overall, like interesting messaging is just we saw that people are not just satisfied with just like only fungible token transfer, but they also like both users and developers kind of want like more functionality on top of that. So that's why we kind of expanded to the interesting messaging system.
Yeah.
Hope that
No,
helps.
that's super interesting, and it's exciting, and it's sort of, I don't know, it's very descriptive of like, the adoption and the growth of Web3. Like we started off with just being able to transfer tokens, and now we're working on like much more sophisticated interoperability, which is always like what I talk about. It's just like, what does it mean to grow Web3? It's the ability to build more sophisticated applications and offer better user experiences, that are comparable to what people are used to in like Web 2 and in like the non-blockchain world. And on that note, I'd like to talk a little bit about like what Oasis Sapphire is doing with our confidential EVM, and then get some of your thoughts on there. So Oasis Sapphire, for everyone who's not aware, is the industry's first confidential EVM. So it's an EVM that enables smart contracts with encrypted network state. And so like one of the ways I normally try to explain this with examples, but if you can imagine that on every other EVM network or really every other blockchain network, you know, all state is public, and this is just how it has needed to be by nature of what blockchains are. But you know, this has limited like the sophistication of what can be built in Web3. And I think maybe the best example of this is like with gaming. So for example, if you want to build like Web3 poker, right? You can't build this entirely on chain because, you know, the network would show what the next card coming out of the deck is. It would show what's in the other player's hand. And so, you know, you can't build this game or like even role-playing games. Like there's this idea of like quests, puzzles, and riddles. And like the solution to those quests, puzzles, and riddles would be viewable because you'd be able to see the smart contract state and what the solution is. So, you know, on Sapphire, like the way I explain it is you basically get to choose what degree you want your smart contract to have encrypted state. You can hide just like one aspect of state or you can hide them all. And I think this is pretty massive for, you know, building comparable experiences to what Web2 has today. You know, like another example might be like Uber. If you wanted to build a Web3 version of Uber, you know, there'd be a lot of privacy leakage in the sense that you would be able to see, you know, where every single person is going and how much they paid for their ride and these types of things. And so in order for us to build these applications that are comparable to Web2, we really need privacy. And so I hope that's a good explanation for everyone who might not be familiar with Sapphire and the confidential EVM. But for you, Michael, I had a question. You know, you talked about, you know, what drove you to interoperability, but I'd love to get your thoughts on like what the potential benefits privacy and the Sapphire network might have for interoperability and for the future of like cross-chain applications.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that's actually very it's great explanation of how like Oasis Sapphire kind of works and like what the idea, like what things can be, or examples of things that can be built on it. And I think like with the like cross-chain messaging added on top of that, I think it would be even more powerful. Like something I could imagine is like a traditional like single chain DApp, right? So if they kind of want to like leverage, say like privacy, like private, computation in privacy, they kind of have to like migrate everything from the original chain to one of those like EVM that has privacy, like which Oasis Sapphire is like one of the best ones, right? That would be kind of prohibitive in many cases, just because say like the application they have, for example, their governance token already on this like Ethereum chain or like a BNB chain or Polygon, whatever, or original chain they already have, and then it's just prohibitive for them to like migrate everything over to like a privacy chain, right? So, but what they can do instead is that they can build this like they can leverage say Sapphire IAM to be able to just like migrate some of their functionality to Oasis Sapphire, but also like retain their like other parts, for example, governance on the original chain, and then still be able to like talk across the two different components on different chains. And I think that's like one use case for any like potential application that wants to like incorporate this like privacy computation feature. And the other one I think which would be more useful is that you kind of can just use this cross-chain bridge as sort of like the input and output, right? It's like it's sort of this like onboard and offboard front to and from a like Oasis Sapphire, right? So you can have like basically whatever. So for example, imagine like a Uber app we were talking about, right? Like you kind of have this like input from a regular non-privacy EVM chain, and with whatever like so you can say like the app that, say for example, just a random app that let's say like gives a summary of like a user's Uber rides, and like the details can still be hidden on Oasis Sapphire, but the input to the query can be like everyone can see it on Ethereum, and then the input can be fed into like Oasis Sapphire, and then all the computation, like all the history, are still hidden, and then the output can be verifiably verified on Ethereum again. So I think that would be something quite useful for any sorts of like application. So I think just think of this like cross-chain interchain messaging system as sort of this like on-ramp and off-ramp to from like privacy EVM chains. I think that's a very promising use case to be built in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what's really cool about that is like it's like sort of everybody wins in these scenarios, right? Like Seller wins as the bridging solution, Sapphire wins as they're providing privacy, and then like the other chains that get to now have these added benefits win because like they don't have to migrate their entire applications, but they still get to add this sophistication to those applications. Like, for example, like one of the things that like, I guess like the way I have been thinking about it a little bit has been like, maybe last year, maybe the year before, like there was this large focus on modular blockchains. So blockchains, which like separated different components, whether it was like the data availability layer or, the consensus layer or the execution layer, they separated out all these different components so that each sort of component specialized in its one area. And sort of the way I've been thinking about it is this is like modular applications. So applications that exist on multiple networks, not as like a SushiSwap or a Uniswap on five different chains, but one where like each chain performs a function within the SushiSwap or within Uniswap. Maybe SushiSwap and Uniswap are not the best example, but the gaming example, the majority of the game can exist on Polygon, but these riddles and quests, they exist on Sapphire. And so these messages are going back and forth, connecting these different chains to build like a modular application where, and you can even probably expand it beyond that. Like it doesn't have to just be two chains. You could maybe have Celestia used for data. You can have Sapphire used for privacy, maybe Arbitrum used for, the public transactions that like are intensive in nature and therefore having cheap gas fees is good. Maybe injective use for liquidity. Like something I was thinking the other day is like if you have like a liquidity, another protocol that's used as like a liquidity layer, maybe they don't want to move, all their ETH or their WBTC to Sapphire in like this token lock and like wrapped tokens minted on the new chain type scheme. Maybe instead like a better way is like they mint like synthetic assets on the chain. So like instead of like there being wrapping and transporting tokens, you have like more like a synthetics type debt pool where you deposit USDC and then you're able to mint a synthetic asset. And that might be like a more practical solution to building TVL on Sapphire and enabling confidential trades, but also like keeping liquidity high. So these are all like, I don't know, this is just how I view it. I don't know, maybe you have some thoughts on that, Michael, or?
Yeah, I think those are like just a perfect, I guess, explanations of how like modular applications, those are better than like my explanation of like how things should work. Yeah, but yeah, I think I was thinking like more just like simpler use cases, right? For example, I think, yeah, you mentioned SushiSwap or Uniswap or Avi, for example. I think, yeah, they can still like, I guess Avi is like, for example, now they kind of have, they're like this like multi-chain application, right? You can have like different, say like Avi or even like SushiSwap, like all of them are just like, all of them are sort of like multi-chain applications. Like on the UI, you can have like, you can like switch between, all their like different deployments on each chain, but there really isn't too much of a like coordination between like all of those. For example, like all the markets on Avi are just like completely isolated, and like from a user perspective, like I don't see like user being able to like move funds around very intuitively. They still have to kind of like go through the bridge UI, which ironically, like even though we're kind of like building this like C-bridge application, right? We kind of like in the long run, we don't want people to like interact with this UI too often. Like all the bridging should happen like underneath sort of like seamlessly with a one-click user experience. Like right now, people have to do like too much of a like a manual bridging, which isn't like the most ideal UX. So yeah, I think with like if developers are leveraging like interchain messaging more, then I think the entire like For example, the DeFi space or like GameFi space can offer like better user experience for users, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said that, like I drew this parallel with like, you know, wallet right now, like the big UX and stuff and transactions and signing transactions is like account abstraction. And sort of like as you were speaking, I was like, this is sort of like app abstraction, like application abstraction. So like, how do you interact with apps in a way that, you know, all of this stuff is abstracted away and the user doesn't have to think about it. So that's really exciting. So the other thing about like bridging that I did want to get into is like security. Obviously, we've seen a lot of bridge hacks over the past few years. I was wondering if you could give some insights as to how Seller approaches security, what you think that you're doing maybe better than what other people are doing, or how you're focusing on security in a different way. As well as I'd love to understand a bit better, like if there's different security assumptions that matter for IAM versus like asset bridging.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think very glad you touched upon that point. Yeah, we've seen a ton of like bridge exploits or hacks or rugs, even in the worst case. And but we at Seller, have put just like number one priority on security, and we kind of like achieve this on multiple dimensions, right? So first off, we try to be like very decentralized, and we're not say, like a simple multi-sig across like say a few or even sometimes like in the worst case like just two or like even one entity, as we see in some of the bridges. So those are just like too centralized and too risky. But for us, like we have a validator network of about 30 validators, and we're still like expanding that set. And we need like a diverse set of validators to be able to like vote with their staked Seller tokens, and people can like stake their Seller tokens on this like a proof of stake and like validator network, and kind of like join this like validating process themselves. And so like with that, we're trying to be as decentralized as possible so that we don't have like any single point of failure, like any email, like for example, like a few nodes, a few validators are compromised, it's not going to like affect the security of the network too much. So I think that's one side. And the other one is like we put very strong emphasis on like what we call like monitoring and rate limiting modules. So for example, like we have sophisticated monitoring system in place that just kind of like monitors say the balances or like the token flows on the connected blockchains. And we like if there is any kind of like unexpected bridge activities, so for example like a bridge activity that we like the validator network didn't actually authorize, we were able to like detect that at the very first second, and then be able to first of all like pause the contract and then like start investigating. So I think that's going to help even if there is some like potential like code bugs within the validator network that like allows a hacker to be able to do that. We're able to detect that very immediately and take action. And also like we have this like rate limiting system in place. I think that's one you're curious about, like whether there is like I guess different measures for the token bridge and the messaging bridge. So they have like something in common, like the ones I talk about, like a decentralized validator network and also the monitoring system. But in terms of like actual monitoring system, the token bridge has on top of it like a more of a rate limiting, like a gate system. So basically we don't want whenever we detect there's like a huge like a bridging request or something, that's very likely something went wrong, right? So we at the smart contract level, we actually put a rate limit on like how much token you can transfer within like a given, like say like every 30 minutes or something, like a given time window, there's this like limit of amount of token that you can transfer. And so that should help also with security. And like in terms of, I mean, in the case of like an actual hack or like any potential like security issue, we'll still be able to like take damage control. I think that's something we like special we did to the token bridging system. But overall, I think we just put like very strong emphasis on security. I don't think we have had any like security incidents yet, but we are still trying to like keep iterating on the security practices and to be able to like do even better.
Yeah. One of the few bridges that have been left unscathed in these past few years, and also one of the oldest bridges. So definitely an attestation to, you know, the hard work you guys have put into security. So thank you for highlighting some of the features and the thoughts you have around it for our community. So I guess before we get into some of the new things that you're doing, I'd like to just like close off on, like, you know, we talked about privacy and different use cases, but I'd love to know, like, what are the use cases that most excite you around Seller IAM and interoperability? Is it these privacy use cases? Is it maybe use cases for DAO governance? Like, what are the things that you are most excited about and you would like to see in the coming months, the coming years?
Yeah, sure. I think personally for me, I'm interested in like all aspects of the apps, but for me, just to be able to see like some of the existing like DeFi applications to like leverage some of the interchain like operability functionalities we provide, that would be already very exciting for me. But as you said, yeah, like interchain governance, like there's like some very like interesting use cases we've seen people building on top of IAM, and like one of them is like cross-chain NFT bidding. So like you don't have to like interact with OpenSea, which is like which you kind of have to like wait and like pay, also like pay a pretty hefty gas fee whenever there's like a strong activity on Ethereum. But like with interchain messaging, you'll be able to just like stay on one of the cheaper chains, one of the like Polygon, for example. Like you don't have to spend a ton of gas on that and be able to like join the NFT bidding process and be able to like buy an NFT from one of the markets on Ethereum. I think, yeah, that's something like users would definitely love. Yeah, and also like GameFi projects have been bridging their like either the game token or their like governance token, because many like GameFi projects have like the two token models, and they've been able to like leverage this like cross interchain messaging to be able to let users like join governance on, say, for example, the BNB chain from the like game, like their like own game chain. The users don't have to like go back to like the BNB chain themselves. Like they can just underneath use the IAM to be able to like do cross-chain governance within their game. So yeah, all of those like very exciting use cases. But I think we're still like quite early on in the process of like building this, what we call like one-click user experience across multiple chains. But we're hoping to see like more applications pop up.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned the NFT auction space, because like I sort of questioned why this hadn't been done yet. Like there was no need to pay the exorbitant ETH gas. Like I'm sure everyone is very familiar with, you know, things like the Yuga Labs when they launched their land sale and things of that nature. Like that they would eat up the entire bandwidth of the network, not only getting into the NFT auction hard, but also like keeping people away from even like making a DeFi transaction, because everyone was doing this NFT mints, and so the networks would be like completely unusable. So like I was always very curious, like why applications hadn't already started taking this approach to minting on Polygon or minting on BSC or Arbitrum, where it's a lot cheaper, and then, you know, at some time later sending a message and saying, all right, here's the NFT that you can actually claim. Like you've already minted it, but and you know you have it, it's all set, but like maybe you claim it at a later date when the network fees were a lot lower. So that's like, I think that's like an exciting use case and solves like one of the massive problems that existed in the last cycle. It also, you know, again, like sort of, I've had thoughts about how privacy can be involved in that too. You know, like I think
you know, while there's the one side of like gas inefficiency, like the other side is just like the auction schemes that we have are like very simplistic. They're like, you know, maybe Dutch auctions, reverse Dutch auctions, and just like flat auctions, like because most of the more complicated, more sophisticated auction types involve privacy. So like in the real world, we see things like sealed bid auctions, second price sealed bid auctions, Vickery Groves auctions, and all of these sort of game theoretical auction types require the ability to not see what other people are bidding. And I think, you know, that Oasis has a place to play there as well. So we're super excited to see like what the future of NFT auctions are like, because I think that it was one of these massive issues in user experience. And like as we go cross-chain, as we incorporate these different functionalities that you spoke of, we can alleviate a lot of the burden and create like a much better Web3 experience for some of those who are like not so native. So anyway, those are just some closing thoughts that I had there. But the other topic that I really want to talk to you about was we noticed that like Seller just launched this Brevis, which I understand is a zero-knowledge omni-chain data attestation solution. I'd love for you if you could give me, you know, a brief introduction to Brevis and what you guys are doing there.
Yeah, definitely. Glad you mentioned our sort of new effort in the ZK space. I think that's actually a very exciting addition to what we already have in the cross-chain space. So Brevis, as you like describe it, it is a like ZK-based data attestation platform. So what we mean by that is that you can sort of think it as in like a ZK-powered Oracle, and also like with the say the existing cross-chain like messaging system we have, it's an omni-chain ZK like Oracle. So it's a lot of stuff packed within a single platform. But the idea is that you can, like, you'll be able to, for example, one use case, the demo use case we already built on Brevis is just like a ZK-powered bridge. For example, people can, like, send a, like, transfer on Ethereum, a cross-chain transfer on Ethereum, and be able to validate that the cross-chain request happened on Ethereum via ZK. So like in our current Seller IAM system, and also like Seabridge, as I mentioned before, the validation, the attestation is by a diverse set of validators, right? They vote, so they monitor the Ethereum blockchain and see, oh, there's a cross-chain transfer request. And then they kind of like cast their votes according to like in proportion to their like Seller tokens that are staked on their like validator nodes. And that, like, we get the smart contract like kind of gathers all the signatures for validators and be like on the destination chain, for example, Polygon, and then issue the tokens or like execute the messages accordingly. So that's like how the current Seller IAM system works. But with a ZK powered system, like say for example, powered by Brevis, and you don't have to rely on this third party set of validators. You can just trust math, right? Like the zero knowledge part of it will take care of the both the attestation of Ethereum block headers and also the transaction itself that attest that it did happen on Ethereum, so that this just like boosts the level of like trustlessness. I think you don't have to like trust any third party to for this like cross-chain messaging. Like you can just kind of like trust math, and I think that will like enhance security a lot. And we'll talk about bridge hacks, and I think with this like implemented correctly, a ZK bridge would help a lot in terms of like security. And I think like, yeah, bridging is just like one use case of it. And as we said, the Brevis is a data attestation platform, so that you don't, like, it's not just like cross-chain messages that it can test. It can test like any, say, for example, like off-chain messaging. And it's like a database, traditional like Web2 kind of database query can be like attested also like by ZK, and be able to like post that on the different blockchain to be able to use that tested data. So yeah, it's all like very exciting, but we were at the very early stage of this platform.
Awesome. Yeah, thank mm-hmm. you. Thank you for that explanation. I guess like the question I have is, you know,
is this something you plan to like integrate into Stellar IM or integrate into the Seabridge token bridge, or is it sort of a different product and you'll have like three separate products? Like, or do you think that people will eventually all migrate to Brevis? Yeah, how do you see this playing out, and how do you see it fitting into like the larger Stellar ecosystem?
Yeah, sure. I think we don't have a complete answer yet to this question, but I think in the end, this will be like integrated as part of our omni-chain operating system kind of roadmap. So Brevis will be a component, and then the current Stellar IM will also be a component. Just because I guess it depends on different use cases, right? If a particular application is fine with our current security model, then they don't actually have to leverage Brevis, because I think ZK is inherently more expensive to some degree. Like all the off-chain, like the proof generation is still quite expensive, and we don't have a mainnet yet, but I think if a mainnet is going to come along, I think in terms of like fee charged to the developers and users, I think those will have some like differences. So, like the traditional model will still be cheaper in the short term, and the ZK version could be like a little bit more expensive in the long term, in the short term. But I think in the long term, yeah, ZK will be like a better, more secure model of how like things operate in the cross-chain. In the cross-chain realm. So I think in the long term, there'll just be like one like omni-chain operating system, like leveraging the power of ZK for like data attestation. I think that would be like the long-term goal. But I think in the short term, yeah, they will coexist. And I mean, the ZK bridge with both on Brevis is more of a demo kind of. It's not like on mainnet yet. It's just for like people to try it out and see how this thing could potentially work. That's a good question.
Yeah. So, like you mentioned, like one pro of Brevis is like much higher security guarantees. One con might be that it's a little bit more expensive. Are there any like other additional pros and cons or additional considerations that, you know, might lead a developer to choose one over the other, or a user to choose one over the other?
Yeah, sure. I think in terms of like pros and cons, I think cost is one of them. And the other one is like at the current stage, if a developer wants to build something more involved in the ZK space, then usually like they have to kind of deal with application specific logic. You can't just like take any random application and you kind of expect like Brevis to generate a proof for that. I think there's still like a little bit more work to be done, translating whatever like the application logic is to like whatever Brevis can prove. And I think, yeah, I won't go into like too much of a technical detail here, but just like the ease of use is still like it's easier to use the current IM system. But to integrate with Brevis, I think we're very actively working on the documentations, examples, or like SDKs or all that. I think there's still like a little bit of like a learning curve here to be able to like do more stuff on Brevis. I think, yeah, that's also a trade-off in the short term. But I think in the long term, the interface will be more or less unified across the two, and or at least like the documentation examples will be better, so that developers can use like Brevis to attest data more easily. Yeah, I think it'll come along. Yep,
it makes sense. I mean, it's actually like one of the things that led us to our TE-based approach with Sapphire versus like a lot of the other privacy solutions is that, you know, it is still challenging to work with, and like this ZK, like that creating application-specific knowledge, but it's I'm sure that these things will improve, and there's like definitely different like use cases that can be useful for both. I guess, you know, the last sort of thing I wanted to touch on with Brevis is, you know, like Brevis is zero knowledge and provides privacy. And Oasis Sapphire is also a privacy network.
Are there any unique benefits like that come with like a zero knowledge data attestation connecting to a confidentially enabled EVM that maybe aren't possible on other networks?
I think that's a good question. I think there could potentially be like a lot of synergy between the two, I guess, like approaches to privacy. Then it's not like one or another. I don't think that's the case. And I think with the pros and cons, like trade off, we talk about. I think there could be, you can have this like sort of like a hybrid privacy solution that for example, the majority of say like the heavy lifting or the parts that are too like computationally prohibitive to be done in ZK can still like stay on say like in a ZK or TE based EVM and to be able to like still have privacy but also like not I guess bounded by like the computational limitations, right? And for more, I guess you can have, like, for example, like the ZK part, of the privacy application, like the ZK SNARKs can handle more of, for example, the protocol level things or the things that you want to like prove Ethereum header that's actually authenticated, you can't have that part in ZK, but then like anything on top of that, the application logic can still, the EVM logic can still like stay in Ethereum Oasis Sapphire, so that you don't have to like try to like prove the entire like EVM execution in ZK, which is usually like very expensive. So I think some sort of like a hybrid approach for whether it be like a ZK, or whether it be for privacy or for like a trustless like verification. I think that's something we could definitely explore. And I think it would sort of like take the best of both worlds, sort of, I think,
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, at times, communities or like the sort of perception is that like these different privacy solutions are at odds with one another. Like there's, competing over, who's going to get the larger share of the privacy pie. But, my thought process has always been that, these are very synergistic technologies. There are things that can't be done without one or the other. But when they're combined, they enable entirely new use cases, enable entirely more sophisticated applications, better user experiences. For example, like one use case involving like end-to-end security and encryption that I thought of is like, we have this idea using the Oasis privacy layer, which probably we haven't gone over yet, but it's what we've been talking about this entire time, is using Sapphire for cross-chain messaging. One of the first use cases we thought of is like confidential DAO voting, right? Like voting on Sapphire confidentially and then sending the results over to another EVM chain, so that they can remove bias from their voting process, but at the same time, get the results they need and be able to make the changes they need. And one of the questions we often get is like, well, how do we know that, the computation was done correctly? How do we know that like these validators didn't obscure the votes, or like nothing was sort of manually manipulated? And so like one use case that makes a lot of sense to me is using a zero knowledge bridge, or is using zero knowledge in general to prove that it was done correctly, but again, still being end-to-end encrypted. So like that's like one use case that is extremely exciting to me. I don't know if you had other use cases that you might want to speak to, maybe just the DAO voting one, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Sure. I think one use case that would be useful, I guess, especially in the recent months, we've seen like a lot of like regulatory actions, like taking actions against like any like decentralized protocols. I think, and also like privacy is sort of just like more of a controversial, I guess, aspect of things, right? Like on one hand, you want like blockchain to be all like transparent and all that, but also like we recognize that privacy is like especially as like privacy in terms of like financial applications, it's like sort of a must have in many use cases, right? But I think one use case we can have is it's sort of like the Uber example you were mentioning, right? You don't want to expose the details of like, say, or your trips and all that, but still be able to like prove something out of it, right? So you can like a very simple use case is that exchanges, right? They can prove all users, like none of the users have negative balance, but also like not revealing any of the like the user's trade history at all to regulators, right? You can still like kind of like provide this like summary of like a financial standing, for example, and without revealing any of the internal details of like the transaction details. And I think, yeah, those will be just for like ZK based or like privacy based like data attestation, that's like very useful for any kind of like regulatory compliance. But I think we're still like very long way from that to be able to like use that technology to like prove things to either regulators or like the outside world. But I think that's like one direction to go, and it's like very promising technology to be employed.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's an extremely exciting example. Yeah. I really like, I don't know. I just think that, you know, it's really exciting to see zero knowledge pick up as well as TE at the same time. I couldn't be more excited to sort of see both where these technologies on their own can take us, as well as what can be done synergistically when they combine. Like, I feel like the sky's the limit when we start combining these technologies, as well as maybe like FHE and MPC together. We're going to be able to expand, you know, what can be done in Web3, like orders of magnitude. So that's just really exciting. But we are past like 45 minute mark now, so it's about time to wrap up. I was wondering if Michael, you had any closing remarks, maybe some plugs of some events that are coming up in the future for yourself. Basically, anything else that you wanted to share with the community before we say our goodbyes.
Yeah, sure. Just a quick mention that we were. I'm not at ECC, but I can. Can you still hear me? Can you?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. I'm not sure it was me or like on your end, but can you hear me now?
Hi everyone. Can you guys hear me now, Michael?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Sorry, I think I had some technical difficulties, so I lost that last part by you. But did you have an opportunity to make your plugs and everything?
Yeah, just want to do a quick mention. We're gonna be at ECC to sort of I think our CTO is gonna be there, sort of like presenting our like latest work. It's more on the Brevis side of things, and that's on the interchain messaging. But yeah, our team will be at ECC, and I think I'm not going to be there, unfortunately. But like our team, like including our CTO, is going to be there, and we, feel free if we happen to be in Paris, like feel free to like catch up and ask any questions, and we're very excited to share some of our like latest work in the ZK field. That's just a quick mention. And yeah, we also just like working on both the cross-chain front and the ZK front. Again, like thanks for inviting me to this space. Like very happy to have shared our thoughts and things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sorry you're not going to be at ECC. It would have been awesome to catch up, but I'll definitely attend the talks that your CTO is giving. I'm excited to hear about Brevis and learn more. On the Oasis side of things, we'll also be at ECC. Actually, Seller will be joining us for panel and Oasis-related content later that night. There'll be lots of food. There'll be drinks. So if anyone's attending ECC, please register. I think you can find the registration links on our Twitter and our website. Hackathon. It'll be on sort of these use cases involved with building cross-chain application using Sapphire as well as Seller, as well as Sapphire native applications. So if people are excited to build use cases that are, you know, exciting and leveraging these privacy solutions, please register for a hackathon and join us there. I hope everyone had enjoyed the conversation. I hope you guys all have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much, Michael, for joining us.
Thank you, Will.